space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the starship Enterprise.
All right, Clay, it's time for an iconic episode of TOS. Your last episode was the Doomsday Machine, which I think was an excellent episode. You thought it was a pretty good episode, pretty strong. Maybe not perfect, but you enjoyed it. Now we're moving on to what is probably more iconic, and I guess we'll see how the discussion goes about whether it's good or not. It's The Trouble with Tribbles. How are you, anyway, in the first place?
I'm good. I was surprised at how much graphic girl-on-girl sex there was in this episode.
Yeah, 5 out of 5. Came over, man.
Wait. Hold on. Did you say The Trouble with Tribbles?
I did.
Oh, I watched The Trouble with Tribbing.
They're right next to each other on Netflix. You can't really blame me. This is episode 15 of
The Trouble with Tribbing, I think, is one of the animated episodes.
This is episode 15 of season 2, directed by Joseph Pevney, written by David Gerold, aired back on December 29th, 1967. A nice Christmas New Year's present, I suppose. Trouble with Tribbles. This episode, the Starship Enterprise arrives at Deep Space Station K-9 to guard a consignment of grain bound for Sherman's planet. Wow, that's the weirdest sentence I think I've ever read. On arrival, a trader named...
I mean, just based on that, this one's an all-timer.
On arrival, a trader named Cyrano Jones gives Uhura a tribble, a small furry alien life form with dramatic consequences. Also, there's some Klingons, as they call them in this episode.
Who speak Klingonese?
I think they say Klingonese. It's not even East, it's Klingonese. Yeah. Clay and I are going to break this one down. We're going to play an audio clip, but then we're going to come back and we're going to break down what a lot of people consider to be one of the best episodes of TOS. It's The Trouble with Tribbles.
Mr. Lurie, if there was no emergency, why did you issue a Priority 1 distress call?
That was my order, Captain.
Captain Kirk, this is Niels Barris. He's out from Earth to take charge of the development project for Sherman's planet.
And that gives you the authority to put an entire quadrant on defense alert?
Mr. Barris is the Federation Undersecretary in charge of agricultural affairs in this quadrant.
And that gives him the authority.
This is my assistant, Arne Darvin.
And this is my first officer, Mr. Spock.
Mr. Spock?
Now, Captain, I want all available security guards. I want them posted around the storage compartments.
Storage compartments? Storage compartments?
The storage compartments containing the Quadro Triticale.
The what? The what? What's Quadro Triticale? Wheat. So what?
Quadro Triticale is not wheat, Captain. Of course, I wouldn't expect you or Mr. Spock to know about such things, but Quadro Triticale is a rather...
Quadro Triticale is a high-yield grain, a four-lobed hybrid of wheat and rye, a perennial also, if I'm not mistaken. Its root grain, Triticale, can trace its ancestry all the way back to 20th century Canada.
Mr. Spock, major point.
It might have been difficult to tell from my snarky tone, but this episode is considered to be one of the best. It makes a lot of top five lists of TOS and everything. I don't think this is a particularly good episode. What say you, Clay, about Trouble with Tribbles?
I would agree with you. I don't think it's terrible, but it's like... I was waiting to figure out what the hell the story of this episode was until they drop it on you like 10 minutes before it's over.
Yeah.
Once they do, I was like, oh, okay, that's kind of interesting. I actually I thought it was going to be more interesting than it was because when they drop the story. Okay, so let me get specific.
Yeah.
Jumping way to the end. When they find that the Tribbles have eaten all of the grain, right?
Thus killing themselves.
Right, but before they tell you they kill themselves, they go to break or something, so there's a couple minutes or whatever.
Yeah.
And so when they expose that the Tribbles have eaten all the grain, my first thought was, oh, man, the Klingons used the Tribbles as like a biological weapon to destroy the grain shipment.
Right.
That's kind of awesome. Nope, it was that they actually used a guy who just looks like a human but is a Klingon who poisoned the grain, and the fact that the Tribbles actually ate the grain was a complete coincidence.
Yes.
Once they did that stuff, I was like, okay.
Thus saving the day. That's a much darker turn, right? If the Tribbles, which are these cute little bunny rabbit things, actually turn out to be weapons of mass destruction, basically.
Yeah, I thought that was kind of cool when that's what I thought it was.
You know, all right, let's get really broad with this one. You know what the problem with this one is? It's a
Chekhov's accent.
It's we need to get to Chekhov. I haven't had a good chance to talk about him yet, but this is what I went through and I looked. This is the second pure comedy episode that the show has done, right after I'm Mud, which is the other what I would consider to be basically a pure comic episode. Star Trek can't do pure comedy episodes. I think there's a lot of reasons for it. I think that they should avoid trying to do it because it never really works out all that well.
Yeah,
I would agree. The actors aren't hired to be comedic actors, right? That's not why we cast them in this role. Mm-hmm. The writers aren't comedy writers. And the problem is that when you're writing a comedy episode, the storyline itself has to be funny. There's something inherently funny about storylines in comedies, right? You can't just put a Star Trek episode, a normal Star Trek plot, and then pepper it with jokes because it comes off so hacky about what your writing is. Because every scene here just sort of ends with like this cute little button joke that isn't particularly funny. Mm-hmm. And they do every single scene that way. Like an example of a joke in this episode is Spock says, "Tell us what you know, we're all ears." And everyone kind of looks at each other and is like, oh boy, the Vulcan of the ears said it. It's like, that joke sucks. That should have been cut out.
At least when they get to TNG, they just throw in a random Ferengi and sprinkle in some space anti-Semitism and everyone has a good laugh.
Everyone has a good time. But would you agree with that point? And I sound really harsh. I think this is a thoroughly average episode of Star Trek that is not funny at all, and therefore it kind of feels like it's worse than it is.
Mm-hmm. I was pretty bored by most of it.
Yes. I think it's an astoundingly boring episode for what people consider to be one of the best episodes the show ever did.
It's one of the best episodes the show ever did for about 10 minutes.
The first 10 or is there
no,
some?
No, for like the middle 10.
Okay.
Like the only reason that it's one of the best episodes is because of the Tribbles themselves.
Right.
Yeah. Which who don't even show up until like halfway through the episode.
Yep. At least they don't show up in numbers until.
Yeah. And right. I think it stands out because they are a very memorable thing that they've never really done anything like that before or after it.
Yep.
And it's cute, it's light, you know, it's a good example of what we were talking about when we got to City on the Edge of Forever, when I was saying like many times a lot of times people who cite the best episode of a given show tend to cite one that is not consistent with what the show usually is.
Right.
Like I mentioned the Buffy the Vampire Slayer musical episode or, you know, something like that, where it's usually like, oh, it's the episode where they really went off the formula and it just worked really well, which is fine.
Right. But I think fans of the series see it as memorable because of how different it is from the rest
exactly,
of the series.
Exactly. And I think that's the case here because honestly, outside of the Tribbles themselves, this episode sucks.
Yeah.
It really sucks. The Klingons fucking blow.
Is this your first Klingon?
Yeah, this is my first Klingon episode, and so far, OG Klingons suck.
they're
like space Russians, basically.
Yes,
and they're not interesting.
Yeah. Yep. Do I? Think
I don't know. I don't find them.
I mean, they're basically humans who are at war. Is the portrayal of Klingons in the original series? They don't have any culture outside of that. The only thing interesting about these Klingons is that the head Klingon is the same guy who played Trelane in The Squire of Gothos, where he was much better in that role. The Klingons in the original series, to me, the most surprising thing is that they stuck with them as the main villain of the series.
Mm-hmm.
When they really don't offer a lot to you besides a kind of bland adversary that can fit any role possible.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the one thing that I found kind of cool about them that you can't do with what Klingons became is what they end up doing at the end of the episode, where it's like, well, if they shave their goatee and just give them a haircut, they just look like normal Italian guys. And yes, you can use them as double agents, which is kind of cool because they don't really ever do that. And I can't think of an alien race in Star Trek where they really do that. Is there another race
this is going to be a big part of Deep Space Nine.
Oh, okay. All right, cool. Yeah. Well, that's cool to get into it because I feel like in Star Trek, generally, when you run into an alien race, the designers are like, well, shit, it's an alien. We got to at least put some weird shit on their face.
Right, yeah.
So to have an alien race like this version of the Klingons, where it's like they're not really that far removed, and if they go undercover, it can work. It's not just Riker with a bunch of fake ears on or something.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
You know, that stuff is interesting, so I'll be interested to see how they get into that in Deep Space Nine. But so that was probably the most interesting part of the episode for me, outside of the Tribbles themselves, which even so, it's just sort of like, yeah, isn't it fun to see Spock look confused?
Right, and he has the joke where he's like, humans seem to be drawn to the purring or whatever as he's petting it. It's just, it's a lot of dumb jokes like that. It's like, you know, and I'll say my most egregious example of the comedy here is, you can tell it's not a comedy writer, because there's a scene, right, where Scotty gets forced to go to shore leave, and he's drinking in the bar with Chekhov, that other guy, and himself, and the Klingon comes up and insults him, right?
Yeah.
The Klingon starts insulting Kirk. Chekhov wants to fight, and Scotty's like, hey, take it easy. Take it easy. We're just having a good time. Don't let him get to you. Klingon keeps insulting Kirk. Scotty keeps saying, hey, take it easy. Take it easy. Klingon insults the Enterprise, and Scotty decks him, right? You're like, oh, that's a funny joke. Like, that perfectly fits the Scotty mold.
Right.
The next scene is 10 minutes of Kirk and Scotty explaining the joke to the audience about why this is funny, you know, because it's like, oh, you didn't attack him when he insulted me. He's like, no. He's like, oh, you insulted him when he insulted the Enterprise. He's like, yes. Like, oh, that's comedy. That's a joke. It's so...
That scene would have worked okay if they gave Kirk something to do as a response to that.
Right.
But he just sort of like doesn't really... He doesn't even really make a face. He just sort of like gives him like an okay, you know, one of those kind of looks.
Right.
If they had written... I feel like you could have written another joke in there and it maybe would have... That scene would have worked a little bit better. But yeah, it is like, it's a long scene of
repeating what we've seen.
Yeah.
Already.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you're familiar with Trials and Tribulations, right?
The DS9 episode. I think that might be the only episode I've ever seen.
Okay. Yeah. That is that episode actually makes this episode much better. I watch this episode now looking for where the Deep Space Nine characters would be in the context this episode.
Nice.
So it's that kind of a thing. We'll get to that at some point. But
my favorite part of this episode is when they go on shore leave and Uhura and Chekhov show up, and Kirk's like, wow, you guys really jumped on the shore leave thing real fast. And Chekhov's like, yeah, Uhura wanted to do some shopping.
Let's talk about Chekhov. Did you get a good idea of Chekhov in this episode? He has that very long opening scene where he's talking with Kirk and Spock and making a bunch of bad jokes, and Spock is not having any of it.
Yeah, I knew we were in for trouble, pun intended, I suppose, after that opening, that cold open, because that cold open was boring as hell.
Yes.
It had no bearing on anything, and it was just like them being snarky with each other over like Russian history. And
yes.
I was like, oh, Jesus Christ.
Yep, yep. So, I mean... The storyline is basically that the Soviets got upset that in a show about space travel where the Russians were ahead of the U.S. in the space race at this point, there was no Russian character on the show.
That's fair.
So it's a valid criticism. So they brought him in, and the way that they hire Walter Koenig to play a fake Russian who is 20 years old, and it's supposed to be basically the young, hip sex symbol of the show.
Oh, is that what he's supposed to be?
Unfortunately, Koenig is balding at this point in real life, right?
Yeah.
So he's wearing this ridiculous wig, and he's talking in this fake Russian accent. Where
he looks like Peter Lorre.
he's
not
to be...
a sex... No offense, Walter, but you're not Ryan Gosling.
So he's supposed to be like basically... the Monkees lead singer, like Davy, whatever.
Davy Jones?
Davy Jones, yeah. He's supposed to be that kind of guy. And he's just such a useless character that it's offensive to me that they kind of he basically splits time with Sulu in these episodes. Mm-hmm. And Sulu is a much better character. Not that he's a great character, but he's like not just this comic Russian character who pops in all the time and speaks with a stupid accent.
Mm-hmm.
What's your opinion of Chekhov? Do you have any opinion about Chekhov?
Chekhov's one of those characters that I didn't. The only thing that I knew about him really was from the movies,
right?
And even in the movies, he's just sort of there for the most part. So I was kind of, I was actually legitimately surprised. Was this his first episode?
No, he's been in since the start of season two.
Oh yes, okay. Yeah. This is the. I was surprised at how much of a character they actually gave him. Like, he doesn't really do anything, but they're clearly trying to write him as sort of like a hothead.
Yes, that's every episode. Every episode could basically be described as Chekhov doesn't do anything, but he has five times the lines of anyone who actually does something in the episode.
Yeah, I don't think it particularly works. Like, I don't really believe that Chekhov is like some sort of hothead badass. He just comes off as kind of creepy.
Yeah.
Who's
still obsessed with the sort of nationalism of 300 years ago. You know, I don't know if Russia still exists in this timeline, but he's very concerned and very proud of Russian accomplishments and things like that.
Well, I mean, they worked so hard.
They did. They shot a monkey into space before us, but we got on the moon first, allegedly. If you believe the fake videotapes, but
go to the Patreon for the real talk.
Have you ever noticed that there's wind on the moon, Clay, in that video? There's no wind on the moon, goddammit.
Oh, have I? And if you notice that you can see the top of the light tower from the kingdom,
yep.
that's on the dark side of the moon, if you look really close.
I think that this episode has the longest Wikipedia entry. I sound really negative about this episode. This episode is not that bad. I'm really just I'm pushing back against the idea that this is a great must-see episode of the original series.
I can sum up my feelings about this episode by whatever Kirk is feeling in any given scene is how I was feeling while watching.
Right.
So when they get down to the space station and he gets there and he's like, you sent out a Starfleet, whatever,
Priority
red flag,
one. Yeah.
Priority one, so we could help you protect a box of wheat? I'm like, yeah, what the fuck, Kirk? What are you guys doing here?
I think that's also the scene where Shatner decided to double up his line readings for 5 minutes. He goes, what?
Yeah.
What? Say, what?
I forgot about that,
He does that for no particular reason, and it goes on for, the entire scene. I don't really understand it, but...
Security.
What? Yeah, and when he's getting pelted with tribbles at the end who keep falling out of the shaft, I feel like the episode is just pelting me with more minutes of the episode as I'm watching.
Yeah, I couldn't help but think there must have been, a grip back there who fucking hated him that was just giddy that he got to whip balls at his
That's
head.
Apparently the storyline. It wasn't supposed to keep happening, but the crew members... So Shatner's reaction is kind of realistic. He looks a little bit irked as he's looking back as people are just throwing these stuffed animals at his head as he's trying to do the scene. Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
I'm sure he's a wonderful guy, though.
I guess we'll just talk about the tribbles for a little bit, right? Because I think what you said was interesting, that if the tribbles were used as a biological weapon, it makes the episode more interesting because it's kind of these little cute things have this devious, unintentional but devious abilities where they're just going to eat you out of house and home.
Yeah.
And I think that would be a good way to go with it. They don't really do anything. And are you surprised or not surprised that the tribbles have never really come back in any TV versions of Star Trek?
Not really.
I'm not surprised, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, what do you do with them?
Right.
You know, the only thing you can do with them is exactly what you did with them in this episode.
Yep.
Unless you did do a story where someone was using them as a weapon somehow.
Right.
Like that, I don't know what else you would do with them.
Yeah, I keep thinking of the new Alien Covenant trailer where they get on a planet. They're like, it's awful quiet. It's like, where are all the creatures? It's like there's just tribbles walking by.
I was thinking about Alien as well, where it's when I thought they were using it as a biological weapon, I was thinking the same thing. It's like they're like gremlins if they don't turn into
gremlins. Yeah.
They just reproduce.
Because I mean, it's a great foot in the door, right? They're cute and adorable, and everyone wants one. But once you bring it in, it's just like this unstoppable sort of force. I appreciate the middle of the episode just because the tribbles are multiplying, obviously, because they're glued to the wall everywhere. But the show, the characters never really comment on how many tribbles there are. Like, they're going through their day-to-day lives while there are just tribbles everywhere, mm-hmm. which I think is – I like that tone of the joking. Like, I like that kind of an aspect where they're not really taking the tribbles particularly seriously and all that stuff. But,
right.
Yeah, it's a weird episode. I mean – And plot wise, not a lot happens here, right? It's just a very simple. The Klingons are here. We're here. We don't like the Klingons. We have a weird planet named Sherman's Planet for some reason, and we have some grain that we need to get down there. Kirk needs to guard the grain.
It's not just grain, Wes.
It's quatragrain or whatever they call it.
It's a very complicated mixture of wheat and rye and some other bullshit.
That everyone knows about except for Kirk, much to his exasperated.
What a weird, like, that's another thing that's, like, clearly not a comedy writer. That's, like, something that they thought was going to be hilarious. Like, what if everybody knows about it except for Kirk?
Right.
That's going to be hilarious.
It's just not funny. I mean, did you think any of the comedy worked here? Do you think that this is, like... I guess I'm interested in your opinion about how Star Trek should do comedy. If they try to do comedy,
I thought once the tribbles get going, I thought it worked fairly well.
Yep.
So you know, as much as I was giving it shit for like, oh, here's Spock with a weird look on his face, when they're all over the bridge, that scene's pretty good.
Yes. Yep.
You know, when they all dump out of the grain thing, that's obviously a classic. That's like the scene that they use every time they show a clip from it.
Yes. Yeah.
I thought it was, I don't know, it was just a lot of filler, it felt like.
A lot of filler, yeah.
Like, the bar fight felt really, like there was nothing behind any of that stuff. And
yep.
Like, the guy who was selling the tribbles. The bar fight felt like a scene from Batman.
Yeah.
You know, where it's like everybody's fighting.
Yeah,
yeah, the 60s Batman, where it's like everybody's fighting, and then there's, like, the Penguin who's trying to light his cigarette, but it, you know, keeps getting knocked out of his hand.
Yeah,
he's
the Cyrano is trying to not spill his drink the entire scene as he's like weaving between people who are decking
exactly.
each other.
Yeah, yeah, it felt very 60s.
Yeah, I think the problem when Star Trek tries to do comedy like this, Star Trek can only pull comedy from the natural universe. Like we talked about in our Suicide Squad movie thing about how the DC universe feels very scattershot, and you're never sure how all these characters are supposed to fit in and exist in any of the worlds that they apparently all exist in at the same time.
Right.
And the problem with doing comedy episodes like this is that it feels so obvious that they're trying to do a comedy episode. It's not like the comedy is sort of naturally just coming out of the situation. Mm-hmm. They're trying to put comedy onto a situation, and it feels very awkward and bad and distracting.
Yeah, Star Trek tends not to do situational comedy very well. They do character comedy pretty well.
Right, yes.
Like, you know, there's been plenty of times in TOS where some sort of interaction between Kirk and Spock and McCoy will be 100 times funnier than anything in this episode because it feels natural.
Right.
It feels, you know, the writers know the characters well enough that they can invert them and subvert them and that kind of stuff.
And that's why I think the Scotty joke works, because that fits the Scotty character.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. Yeah. But yeah, once you start trying to whenever they try to manufacture a comedic scene, it never really works that well.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And if that's not just TOS either. That goes into TNG, I think, a lot too.
Yes, yeah. I mean, I'm trying to think of the most trying to be funny TNG. I think TNG realized that a little bit better. They don't have particularly Data's Day, maybe, would be mm-hmm. like their straight comedy type episode and stuff like that. But yet, it felt TNG, I think, I agree, it doesn't succeed when it tries to do it, but I think it does it. It has a more awareness of what the show is than TOS does when TOS tries to do these comedy episodes.
Unfortunately for TOS, they don't have the the joke signifier that TNG did, which was Riker just makes that joke. I just heard a joke face.
Yeah, so
where his eyebrows kind of go up and he kind of looks at the person next to them, which is probably my favorite thing in the whole series.
Oh, Data Cox's head would be the other sort of clue that we just had a joke be told. Yeah, and I mean, I guess we can just kind of wrap it up with a discussion of the Klingons, as they call them here, because I think it's worth getting into a little bit. So we have Koloth, who will be important to remember. The Klingons, they tend to fight people in bar fights. And they mention the Organian Peace Treaty, which is important in this one, because that ties into the resolution of Errand of Mercy way back in Season 1. So we are treated with the Klingons at this point, or the Federation is, rather, not us. But that will obviously be an important building block going forward. And I just think that the problem with the Klingons is that they are not different enough from humans. You said that you like that they can kind of blend in, but they really don't have... TOS is interesting in that they almost inverted the Romulan and Klingon personas. Mm-hmm. The Romulans have more of the honor society.
Yep.
And the Klingons are more just kind of the devious, will sort of set you up to fail kind of characters.
Yeah, they're very shifty.
Yeah, shifty would be a good way to describe them, yeah. And I think that's interesting, but I think that maybe that goes to show that the shifty character, the honor character is more interesting, because I like Balance of Terror more than any of the Klingon episodes that we've seen so far.
Yeah.
I think it's just a better adversary. Like, in your mind, what would be the most ideal adversary for the Federation? Not that something that doesn't have to exist, but what kind of trait would you look for to make the Federation's ideal counterpoint? Or would the Klingons or Romulans sort of be, would one of the races that already exist kind of match that personality?
Yeah, I think it's more the Klingons as they become later really kind of turn into that for me, because I think the ideal adversary for the Federation is going to be a society that is adverse to the idea of the Federation.
Mm-hmm.
Not necessarily evil, but set in their own ways to a point where they're too stubborn to really, you know, basically what the Klingons turn into.
Right.
Because, you know, what I find interesting about that is I always like villains, for lack of a better term, who, if you really kind of sit down and listen to their side, they're not entirely wrong.
Right.
Or at least you can see why they would think that they were right. Like Magneto from the X-Men. If you listen to just Magneto, he makes a pretty good case mm-hmm. for things.
The Malcolm X versus the Martin Luther King.
Yeah, probably. Yeah. Not to oversimplify it too much, but yep. Yes. You know, it's usually the approach which is bad. When I say bad, I don't mean quality wise. I mean like the villainousness comes from the avenue in which they take to accomplish their goal, not necessarily what the goal is.
Yeah, the villains are always more the ends justify the means.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And I think that is a really because you know the Federation is all about unity and moving forward. So naturally, the antithesis of that is someone who is about individualism and regression.
Yeah.
So that's basically what the Klingons become, because the Klingons are always, at least what they become eventually, is a group who is very reluctant to be in the Federation or to deal with the Federation. But even though they are, they're not going to sacrifice their own culture and all that kind of stuff just to appease the Federation.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I think that's a good point. And
Which is why I find it, you know, it's kind of weird for me, because I've always found it kind of strange that the Klingons, at least in the TNG universe and moving forward from there, became good guys as universally as they had.
Yeah.
Because they seem like such a natural adversary. But at the same time, I also like that, because I've always been a big fan of whenever you have a group dynamic kind of story, like something like Star Trek. I guess Star Trek doesn't really do it, but something like I'm trying to think of a good example. I can't think of one. But the first time I came across it was, do you remember the Beast Wars Transformers cartoon?
Yeah, the animated cartoon.
Great show.
Yeah.
The best thing I thought about that cartoon was you had your Decepticons and you had your Autobots, right? And then the Decepticons, there was one Decepticon who got kicked out for some reason. I can't remember why.
Yeah.
And he ended up joining up with the Autobots. But you never quite knew whether or not he was there for nefarious reasons.
Right.
So he always added a bit of intrigue to whatever the good guys were doing.
Yep.
So I like that the Klingons kind of occupy that space where it's, yeah, they've signed all the papers, but you're never 100% sure that they're going to do what they said.
Yeah, right.
But yeah, I mean, the Romulans end up taking up the space that the Klingons should fill. And how do you feel about that? Do you think the Romulans work as well as a villain for the Federation?
In TOS or just like overall of the series?
Just overall.
I think the Romulans are the big letdown of the villains because I think they do like the inverse track of what the Klingons do, where they start off as this sort of honor-bound thing. And they eventually just turn into kind of the shifty race that's like always just sort of plotting behind things.
Yeah.
And I think it's what's most frustrating about the Romulans is that the Romulans clearly have this like very interesting societal structure that's based on Roman society, basically. Mm-hmm. And you never see any of it. Like, remember Unification. Remember Unification in TNG, which is the Spock on Romulus storyline, the two-parter?
Yep, that hot Spock on Romulus action.
which is truly terrible, but it's like they never really feel willing to go and explore that situation.
Yeah, I don't know because I haven't watched everything that they've ever done, but is there... I feel like the pitfall that they end up having generally is that... most of the other races they run into end up being default shifty.
Yes.
Like, is there another race that kind of steps into what the Klingons were and kind of fills that role of being like, no, we're actually as equally principled as you guys are, and we just, you know, that whole thing I was talking about. Like, they're not necessarily bad guys, but they are going to fight the Federation if they can.
Yes. That is the linchpin of the Dominion War in Deep Space Nine.
Oh, cool. All right.
So... I mean,
to circle back around then, what do you think is the best adversary for the Federation?
The best adversary for me is basically what they do with the Dominion, where the Dominion is basically a mirror universe Federation, where it's a bunch of races that are aligned with each other. And it's much more where the Federation is built on sort of a free society. The Dominion is not built on that whatsoever. It's built more on like a power structure than right anything. But they also are not just purely evil. There's like a motivation to what they're doing.
Sounds good to me.
So that's kind of what it is. They mature it a little bit. Like I think the problem with the one-off races is that you don't really... Their motivations for sort of existing on their own kind of becomes difficult to understand after a little bit of time. Like, how can the Romulans and Klingons exist in this sort of realm where they don't really seem to have a lot of alliances like the Federation does?
Uh-huh.
Like, how can they possibly stand up and do anything against what seems to be a much larger force than they are?
Yeah, that's a good point.
It's just kind of a weird thing like that. But they also will also learn in Enterprise why the Klingons have smooth heads in the original series. And everyone is very... very excited to learn about that, I'm sure.
Is it like a satisfying answer?
No, it's an overly written answer to explain a makeup difference is basically how that is seen and like perceived at this point.
Oh, that's kind of stupid.
Yep, it's a little bit unfortunate, but yeah, that's Trouble with Tribbles. Not a great episode. I'll be interested to see where you rate it, though, Clay, when we wrap this up.
I do want to talk about one more thing before we wrap it up. At the end, right, where they do the whole thing where the Tribbles are racist towards Klingons?
Yes.
Is it that they're racist towards Klingons, or is it that they're racist towards evil Klingons? Because there are three Klingons in that room, and the Tribbles only freak out towards two of them.
Huh. They can see into the hearts of a man and know what lurks within.
Until Bones came in and explained the thing about the virus, so the virus was killing, I still thought that they were using them as a weapon.
Yep.
So I thought, oh, clearly that these two Klingons, the undercover guy and the bad guy there, were using these things in a negative capacity. So they were at the Tribbles, however they know anything, were adverse to them because they were treated poorly or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
Because they didn't react to the third Klingon. And also, why wasn't this a bigger deal? Like the Klingons are under treaty and they're doing this thing. They're, you know, both down there on shore leave in a very peaceful capacity.
Yeah.
And there's a shipment of grain that needs to get to a planet so it can not die of starvation. And it turns out that the Klingons have poisoned the entire supply of grain. And then they're just like, well, see you guys later.
Yeah, they chase them off. Kirk's like, get out of here.
Yeah,
just gotta
like,
run
why
off
is it not a – isn't that like an act of war?
that's the problem with the comedy episode, right? You can't have these weird one-off things and play them for comedic effect when we're living in a TV show that's built around this universe of these are like basically enemies who are – like finger on the button towards each other. You know what I mean? It's just it doesn't really come out to anything, I suppose.
It's fairly, I don't know, it's fairly unsatisfying.
I thought I had one more the one thing I thought was interesting is that the Klingons clearly know what the Tribbles are, because in the bar scene, the guy, when the Serrano goes up and tries to get the Klingon the Tribble, the Klingon tells him to get those parasites out of his face.
Right.
So they're clearly aware of what the Tribbles can do. They don't feel like telling anybody, though, which I guess is the Klingon way.
Bunch of
guys,
shifty bastards.
We're going to play an audio clip. Me and Clay are going to come back and give our final thoughts and ratings for The Trouble with Tribbles.
Jim, I think I've got it. All we have to do is quit feeding them. We quit feeding them, they stop breeding.
Now he tells me.
Yep. This Tribble is dead. And so are these.
A lot of them are dead. A lot of them are alive. But they won't be for long.
The logical assumption is that there is something in the grain.
Yeah, bones. I want the Tribbles, the grain, everything analyzed. I want to know what killed these Tribbles.
I haven't figured out what keeps them alive yet.
All right, if I find out anything, I'll let you know.
That isn't going to do you any good, Kirk. This project is ruined, and Starfleet is going to hear about it. And when they do, they will have a board of inquiry, and they will roast you alive.
Yes,
and I am going to be there, Kirk, to enjoy every minute of it.
Yes, until that board of inquiry, I'm still a captain. And as captain, I want two things done. First, find Cyrano Jones. And second... close that door.
All right, Clay. I think we both seemed underwhelmed, or as if I've actually been waiting a while to sort of explain why I don't think this episode is particularly good and how it sticks in my craw that everyone seems to think it's one of the top TOS episodes of all time. What are you going to give this guy on a scale of 1 to 5?
3.
Yeah, I'm a 3 as well. It's maybe people listening are surprised because we felt like we were going at it hard, but it's really just the fact that I think it's a thoroughly average episode that I find kind of boring and not funny. Without it being so bad that I can knock it down a few marks. There's nothing objectively wrong with it. It's just not enjoyable to watch.
Yeah, I would agree. Yeah, I think it's fame and admiration just comes from the fact that there's 10 minutes in the middle of it where there's a bunch of cute things in it.
Yeah, cute for a little fuzzy guest.
Those are iconic enough that if you see it in like a montage of clips from TOS enough times, it's like, oh yeah, that's that great episode where those things were in it.
Yep. Yep.
And you forget about the overarching 40 minutes of talk about wheat.
I mean, I'm a little bit surprised by the stuff that sticks. Like a non-Star Trek fan would know what a Tribble is. Am I mm-hmm. thinking too much? Or do you think the common person at least has an idea of what a Tribble is?
Yeah, I think more or less. I mean, maybe not as much now.
Yep.
Well, maybe that's unfair to say because this stuff is pretty, you know,
omnipresent. Basically, yeah.
I feel. But generally
people,
yes. Generally yes. I think.
Yeah, it's interesting what kind of stuck. The Tribble stuck. The Mirror Universe stuck. Even though I thought the Mirror Universe was a good episode, but I don't know if it's as classic as that and everything.
That's another one too, where they don't even really do the Mirror Universe thing for like a while into it. I could be completely wrong.
No, the teaser ends with them entering the Mirror Universe.
Oh, it is. Yep. Okay. Did they do two of those episodes?
TOS?
Yeah.
No, they only did the one, but the Mirror Universe comes back in Deep Space Nine and Enterprise.
What the hell am I thinking? Is the Mirror in the Mirror Universe one?
Yep.
Obviously, it has. I guess I should probably just go back and watch the episode. It's Goatee Spock,
yep,
right?
Goatee Spock.
Do the Kirks switch places?
Yep. Evil Kirk goes to the normal Enterprise, and our Kirk goes to the evil Enterprise.
Right. Okay. All right. For some reason, I thought those were two different episodes. Like, I thought there was one where it was like...
Oh, there is an episode where a transporter accident creates an evil version of Kirk, which appears on the same Enterprise that Kirk is on.
That's what I'm thinking of.
Yes.
Okay.
Yep.
See, guys, I watched the shows.
That's right. I enjoyed that episode, too. That one is a little bit more symbolic, I suppose, but... We'll see. Yeah, I'm going to give this one a 3 as well. I think it's a very average episode of the show that I find pretty boring. The Tribbles are cute. The Tribbles are iconic more of how sort of silly they are than anything. Like, it's just a little beanbag with a fur ball.
I guarantee you, if you, like, dug up the original design illustration for the Tribble, it was probably like, yeah. And then, you know, it curls up into this ball. But then it rolls out, and it's got, like, feet and, like, tentacles and shit, and it's really, really cool.
Yep.
And then they were like, yeah, we've got money to make hairy styrofoam.
That's exactly what it was. They were originally envisioned as, like, Ewok-type things, like little teddy bears.
Yeah. I don't know why I knew that, but 100%, that's what it feels like.
Yep, and then they looked at it, they're like, we can't do this. You're just going to have a little fuzzball. I think the fuzzball in this actually makes it work better.
I think so, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're very disarming.
Yes.
And I think if they were more, I mean, even seeing the move is kind of weird.
Yeah.
Like, it almost feels like it would be better if they just sort of sat there and cooed and didn't actually have the ability to, like, move around.
Right.
Or at least you didn't see it.
Yep, yep.
Because it's, you know, I don't know. Then it feels a little, I feel like it would be even funnier if they didn't. If they were just there.
if you weren't even sure they were alive, it's just kind of like a little toy thing. Yeah, I think it's much better with the way that they went, and I think it works out better. I mean, it also, you know, if Kirk at the end was buried in dead teddy bears, it would have been a little bit more disturbing too. So I think it's better that you can't really tell that they're dead.
I'd give that one a 5 all the way.
Guys, if you enjoyed the content today and you're on YouTube, like and comments, appreciate it. iTunes rating and review helps get the show out there. Rate us on all the podcatchers, Stitcher, all that stuff. Facebook.com/ThePenskePodcast. And then Patreon.com/ThePenskePodcast. You can go there.
I forgot that they were all, that he was like waiting in a pile of dead dribbles.
Yeah, it's really disturbing.
He doesn't just go, blah, and like jump out or something.
Because the way it's revealed, too, Spock is like, this tribble is dead. And McCoy scans the pile. He's like, most of these tribbles are dead.
Most of them are dead. They've been dead for a while.
They have a peculiar odor. You can go to patreon.com/ThePenskePodcast for a couple dollars a month. You get to support the show, and you get extra content. We talk about movies, talk about other TV shows, talk about lists, top 10 lists, more Star Trek content, all that stuff. Go there, patreon.com/ThePenskePodcast. Clay, thank you very much for coming on.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
This is your last season 2. You'll probably be back for a season 3 episode before all things are said and done. But we're almost we're moving through TOS on a nice little pace here, and then we're going to get to the movies and all that stuff. So, if you had to sum up Trouble with Tribbles in one sentence, what would you say?
Fun.
I'd say I think I'd use a T. I'd go with trifling or something like that.
Trifling.
I'd just call it the Trouble with Tribbles, a trifling, terrible triffles.
Mm-hmm.
Guys, that's it. The
terrific.
Tribbles are done. We won't see Tribbles again. You see them in the backgrounds of movies. I think that's what they're relegated to at this point.
Yeah, they show up in Star Trek Into Darkness.
Yeah,
briefly, I think
they're on a desk or something. Like someone
I think McCoy is like dissecting one.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, it's in a cage or something in a whole lab. Yeah, that's it. And what the hell comes after this episode? Let me just see here. We've got the Trouble with Tribbles, Piece of the Action. That's right. So if you want to see how Star Trek can do comedy, check out A Piece of the Action because I think it's pretty successful at it. But we'll see you then. When we get there. Clay, thank you again.
Oh, thank you.
See you guys later.